On today's episode of The Good Word, Tom Haberstroh joins us to talk about the Pacers gagging, Jason Tatum stopping himself from gagging, and how injuries are playing a bigger part in these playoffs than usual. All that and more on today's episode.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday, which means we got Tom Haberstroh with us live from Charlotte, North Carolina, which is not Miami.
Learned that pretty quickly when I moved here. Yeah.
A little slower pace. Just a tad bit slower. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Doing better than the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's gagging, there's choking, and there's choking on applesauce, right? I think the Pacers choked on applesauce last night. Tom, I felt like it was a failure of all three levels, from the point guard, Tyrese Halliburton, who had one of the best assist-to-turnover ratios that I can think of, probably in NBA history. I haven't looked it up, but it's almost like 10 to 2. You normally don't see that. He literally dribbled the ball off of his foot because he saw the shadow of Drew Holiday, and then Drew Holiday forced him into a real turnover in overtime. And then Rick Carlisle just had a total brain fart from, hey, let's inbound the ball underneath our own basket, to let me not call timeout, to let me make sure that these guys know we're fouling up three. Like, what was the most egregious of all of that as Boston takes a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I think it's got to be advancing the ball. Just one of those moments as a coach where it's almost like it should be innate that you make that call to advance the ball and get out of the backcourt. You had a timeout. You could use it. I understand, Vinny, the idea that like fouling up three is a little risky in that situation, yeah, because Jaylen Brown, as Pascal Siakam said it, he was squared up, shoulders squared up in the corner. But if you watch the play again, Vinny, Pascal Siakam does the second worst thing you could do in that situation, which is he does kind of make contact and then he puts his arms down, giving Jaylen Brown a clear shot at, you know, at the basket. So he didn't even contest the shot.
Right.
He had a moment where he could have fouled him, and I get it. You know, maybe you risk him, you know, fouling and getting a 4-point shot.
Yeah, yeah.
But dude, at least contest the shot. At least put your hand up straight up and give at least a little bit of pressure on Jaylen Brown. So the math here, the analytics, if they've studied fouling up three, the science of it, LeBron James said after the game, tweeted after the game, like, that's why I foul up three. You force the two shots and then you get the ball back. The numbers on this are a little less clear. It's closer in terms of like the average situation, but at least you got to contest the shot, right, Vinny?
Right.
Like, contest the shot. If you're not going to foul, you do not have your hands down. It's a tough shot. Jaylen Brown, you know, that's a lot of stones to hit that shot. Great shot by Jaylen. But Pascal Siakam either has to decisively foul him on the catch, or you got to have straight up hands.
Well, for me, I felt like it was two mistakes on that play, none of which were related to Pascal Siakam being squared at the rim. Once a guy is squared at the rim,
There's more mistakes?
I felt like Indy wasn't switching all screens. I feel like when someone's inbounding underneath the basket, you know, in one direction or the other, it doesn't leave that much room. I felt like Indy was given a break by where Boston was inbounding the ball because the line of sight was going to be severely obstructed by whoever was inbounding. I forgot who was inbounding it.
Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday was inbounding it. So I feel like you switch all screens, you can leave the middle of the floor open because a two doesn't hurt you. You switch every screen, you stay high on everybody's, you know what I mean? You stay close to everybody's shoulder. So as soon as there's any level of screen, I'm switching and getting out. I'm not worried about someone, you know, a small being switched onto a big, or Al Horford being onto Andrew Nembhard, which was on the other side of the floor. Fine, I'll give up the layup. I'll give up the 16-footer, whatever it is. You just can't let them catch it. Pascal Siakam was chasing Jaylen Brown to the three-point line, when he was closing to the body, you should never have to close to the body. The screen should, you know what I mean? And you never, and here's my other thing. The corner three is the easiest three to take, right?
Gotta close it off, man. You gotta shut down all potential for a corner three.
You gotta close off the corners. If he catches it on the left wing and shoots a three over a contested, over two hands in his face, fine, you tip your hat. But Boston got exactly what they wanted in that. I felt like if they were having their druthers, because Jason Tatum was wet in the bed. Like, everything was set up to me, Tom, in the last second. And people were on Twitter, Jason Tatum was a plus 20. Yeah, that's fine. I was on an airplane for most of that game. And when, you know, when there wasn't turbulence and when the internet connection was good in the fourth quarter, I did not see a plus 20 Jason Tatum. I saw them, oh, they're going to have to go to Jaylen Brown because he's the only person that looks like he's engaged. And he got the shot he wanted to take. He got to the spot he wanted to get to. And the Pacers did everything in aiding him to getting to that spot. That's why I felt like there were multiple breakdowns there. I felt like Indy should have switched on those screens.
Yeah. And you're not getting a double bang out of Mike Breen if you switch those screens. It was an incredible shot from Jaylen Brown and rescued Jason Tatum. Let me be clear about this. You said it. He was plus 20. I get it. But he was also 0 for 6 in a 13-minute stretch in the fourth quarter and overtime. From 9:40 in the fourth quarter to about 1:15 in the overtime, he had missed all 6 shots. He had a completely boneheaded turnover where he just kind of like threw the ball and Tyrese Haliburton went the other way.
That was so silly.
It was crazy. It was crazy. And I've been harping on this, that like, he's got a Mamba mentality in clutch situations and the numbers don't back it up. Like, he should be deferring a little bit more to his teammates, because this season, here are the numbers. Jason Tatum is shooting 36% from the floor in clutch situations and 32% on threes. The effective field goal percentage, which is weighted for three-pointers, extra value for threes, he is shooting 41% this season, Jason Tatum. This is including the overtime last night. 41% effective field goal percentage is 39th among 41 players.
Oof.
There's 41 players with at least 50 shots in clutch situations this entire season, postseason included. Among those 41 players, he is ranking 39th in effective field goal percentage. So this is not to say Jason Tatum can't come up clutch. I'm saying if Jaylen Brown doesn't hit that shot, doesn't rescue the Celtics in that shot, we are only talking about Jason Tatum and the lemon booty that he had in that game. Thank you to Bomani Jones for that.
No, it feels like
the entire story.
It was this. If y'all are watching on YouTube, cheeks. Yeah. The cheeks.
Cheeks.
The cheeks were tight. The cheeks were tight, Tom. Them cheeks was cheeking, baby. The turnover, I'm trying to figure out where Jason Tatum was looking, because Drew Holiday wasn't anywhere near releasing. And he was throwing the ball to just a spot. Like, the Celtics won the game, and you don't apologize for winning a game in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I felt like everything that we doubted about the Celtics to a certain point was in fruition, came to fruition in that way. You are going against a team that doesn't mind going up and down, and Boston did not know how to handle that style, I felt like. I felt like Boston was thrown off by the fact that the Pacers were going to go run off of misses, and they were going to try to get everything downhill, even moving Haliburton off the ball and letting other guys create, including Pascal Siakam. I just felt like, I won't say they weren't prepared. Maybe it was just the way that first games go in a playoff series, where you're no longer playing the team that you were playing and you had a long rest, and now you got to get used to a new team scent almost. And I felt like it took them a long time to adjust. But man, from the turnovers to the boneheaded plays to the fact that you needed another team to fully gag at every level of the executive branch, from the coaching to the point guard. We're going to get to Tyrese Haliburton, because he came up small in a bunch of different ways. I felt like our doubts about the Celtics, this is why we doubt the Boston Celtics.
Yes. And man, it was over. 27 seconds left. They had a 95% chance of losing that game. So the win probability, according to Inpredictable.com, win probability, Tyrese Halliburton, the Pacers have the ball up three. They had a 95.4% chance of winning that game. They had up to 98.6% chance, the Pacers, of winning that game when they had the up three with the ball, 10 seconds left. They throw it away. Nembhard throws it away. Pascal Siakam, I think Tim Legler did the right thing when he said, Pascal Siakam has to come to the ball.
Yep,
he has to meet the ball rather than kind of running away towards the basket. I know Nembhard, it wasn't the best pass, but at least, I mean, it's one of the first things you learn in basketball is you got to come meet the pass. And so they get a hand on it. They get that out of bounds play. Jaylen Brown hits the shot. It's crazy. But like, to me, when we talk about the Celtics, they hadn't been tested yet. They have, whether it's injuries to Jimmy Butler and Jaime Jaquez Jr. in game five, they didn't have Terry Rozier, or they didn't have a couple other guys in that series. Then you look at Cleveland, they didn't have Jared Allen. They lost Donnie for the last two games.
Right.
They hadn't been tested, not just in the in terms of injuries, in terms of personnel of the opponent. They had one clutch minute in those first two rounds to their name. 1 minute of clutch play, clutch action. And when you look at like teams like the New York Knicks, they had eight games, practically every game that the Pacers and Knicks played, and went down to the wire, and they had those reps when things got tight. The Boston Celtics, it looked like all of those kind of nightmare scenarios that the Boston fans have been worried about. You know, the boogeyman is real. It was showing itself when Jason Tatum clammed up there at the end. And without Tyrese Halliburton clamming up himself and doing the thing where it's like, oh, I forgot how to dribble. Like, I get it. You mentioned the Jrue Holiday kind of forced him into that turnover there on the baseline, on the sideline there. I kind of felt like he just lost his dribble. Like, there was pressure, but he just lost his handle. And it was like, yo, this dude is, like you said, one of the most sure-handed point guards in the game today, and he just lost it multiple times down the stretch.
Jrue went over the screen. Like, they were trying to screen for Tyrese and get him in a little bit of space. And once Jrue got over the screen, Halliburton just panicked. You could just see it in his face. And maybe this is where you look at Tyrese Halliburton and you say, you know what, this is your first real playoff run. And you have gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you're playing against the Boston Celtics, one of the best perimeter defense teams in the league. But he was having his way with them in game one. Like, he wasn't necessarily getting downhill, but that jumper, that awkward corkscrew thing that he does, it was working. He had six threes. Like, I felt like to some degree, that's the book on him, is that if you can, you get up on him and you see what happens. Not necessarily that he's going to make those type of mistakes, but you want to speed him up and get him off clock, get him off his own clock. And I felt like Jrue Holiday is the perfect type of dude to do that. The one where he dribbled it off of his knee, I have zero clue what the f*** he was thinking. I don't know. I have no clue what he was thinking. Like, I think there was, maybe it was a minute left. I feel like he took a three with 16 seconds left on a shot clock that he didn't have to take. Like, it was a little unnecessary, like in regulation when you guys have the lead. It was just weird decision making. And perhaps, Tom, I have PTSD. I'm from Detroit. You don't throw the ball underneath your own basket. Bird steals the ball. It's still too soon. I don't want to see the highlight. But every time a team does that, I'm looking at the coach and I'm saying, if nobody is coming free, and it was clear that nobody was coming free, Tom, you had plenty of time to call a timeout. You had plenty of time. Players and coaches, like, game plan discipline. And the Pacers are not a team, especially in that Knicks series. They got hosed in a couple of those games. It wasn't that they choked. They got hosed. And was it game one in New York or game two? I can't remember which game it was. Like, all the games seemed to run together where they had a couple of bad calls. But they had acquitted themselves generally well. You can acquit yourself well and just lose a game. They acquitted themselves horribly in game one. And now I wonder about, hey, did we just blow our chance at making this a really competitive series? Like, I know they win at home and they're always going to win games at home, but I feel like this has some carryover. This isn't the Knicks series. This Celtics team is as close to full without Kristaps Porzingis, who I don't think will play game two. You know, maybe he'll come back in game three. But this Celtics team is not the Knicks. This ain't a MASH unit. This is a really good team. And if you got them down, you've got to beat them.
I kind of feel like the Celtics are feeling worse today than the Indiana Pacers.
Really?
I feel like the Pacers gave it away. They feel horrible. I got a text from my one of my Indiana buddies who was just like, I'm sick to my stomach this morning, sending a win probability graph from last night's game. They're sick right now. But I feel like they're sick in a way that they know they can compete. Like, they know they had it. Which, if they got blown out in game one, I think they're feeling way worse because they don't know that they can hang. After game one in Boston, they feel like they can hang. They can compete. They were up 3 with 10 seconds left against a team that many are projecting to be the eventual champions, and they got a window here. The reports are that Kristaps Porzingis at the earliest could come back at game four. So, Vinny, like, they got game two, they got game three. Game three at home in Indiana, and they just put them on the brink. And Jason Tatum looked fragile in those clutch moments. And yes, he did come back. I have to say it. He had 10 points in overtime, which is the most for any playoff performer since Damian Lillard did it in 2021. Mm-hmm. So there was a point where Jason Tatum took over. But man, if Jaylen Brown doesn't hit that shot, not only do the Celtics lose that game, but Jason Tatum is getting the world on his shoulders in the same way. I know it's not the same situation, but the game six Ray Allen shot in the corner where the entire conversation around LeBron James and the Miami Heat shifts in that 1 3-pointer from Ray Allen. It's the same thing. Did Mike Breen give that a double bang?
No.
I can't remember.
No, he just gave that that was just a bang.
That was just a bang.
I didn't think the Jaylen Brown shot deserved the double bang, to be perfectly honest with you. I really didn't. I don't even think Mike Breen thought the shot deserved the double bang. Maybe the audio was off, but it just didn't seem like the announcement and the sound of the arena were in the same place. It was almost like he did it remotely. Like, I know they were there. I just felt like something was off with the sound because it just didn't feel like fully aligned. And Jaylen Brown hitting the corner three to send game one to overtime. I don't know if that's deserving of a double bang. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I have a higher standard for such things. And as for win probability, I'm not sure what the Denver Nuggets win probability was in game seven when they were up 58-38 at home against the Minnesota Timberwolves. But I'm pretty sure it was probably in the 90 percentile range. And they're at the crib.
They blew it.
Chilling. Another team that
they
gagged.
Blew it.
Another team that gagged. But the Jason Tatum conversation. I'm very curious, Tom. Is he going through, I won't say identity crisis, but it doesn't feel like he has this go-to move that will get him to the line, that can help him sort of work through the bad moments. I talked about it with Gary Washburn. Like, he's only had two games up until last night where he shot over 50% from the field, you know, in the playoffs in two 30-point games. And those were not the same two games. Like, it was more lower volume. Is there a lack of maybe more length than athleticism for him because he's 6'10", but he's not a blow-by-you type? Is there something that he's missing in these clutch moments that he just can't get to?
I wonder if it's just the miles of the last 6 years this dude has gone to the finals or conference finals every single year where it's just like, man, he's playing like 80 to 100 games every year when most guys are playing 60 to 70. And so you wonder if just the legs, if he has the legs to get by guys or to have the confidence to stop and go the D cells and get you off balance, to get you off your feet. Because, look, we're hitting on Jason Tatum right now in a game in which he had 36, 12, and 4, right? We're pointing out that he has another level, right? We know he has another level. This is almost like it's a backhanded compliment that we want more out of Jason Tatum. And it's true. Like, you know, when you talk about the 2004 Detroit Pistons, who, any of those guys deserve to be MVP of the season on that team?
No.
It's okay. It's okay if Jason Tatum is not an MVP, the best player in the NBA.
Right.
If the Celtics are going to win it, it's probably going to mean that he can be the Rip or the Chauncey where he's, you know, an amazing offensive player. Good. He was very good on defense in this game, by the way, in game one.
Yes.
He doesn't have to be Jokic, Luka, LeBron, Steph to be considered an all-time great. So I don't know how you feel about the comp of the Celtics with their starting five and how good they all are, two-way players. And Jason Tatum, we want him to be the MVP of the league. We feel like he can get there. But I also feel like, you know what? If they're just going to be an amazing starting five unit, play just nails on both ends of the floor, do we care? Should we care that Jason Tatum is not that alpha, top 10 all-time guy?
I feel like because of the pedigree. Because came out of Duke and was clearly the number one player going into that draft. Like, no disrespect to Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz, right? You know what I mean? Like, that just wasn't going to be the case. Like Jason Tatum was the guy. And you don't lose that. The Mamba mentality, all the stuff, the relationship with Kobe. Like, the mythology of Jason Tatum has probably exceeded what he's actually done. Like, now, granted, he gave you a 50 ball in the Game 7 against the Philadelphia 76ers last year. That's also the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that cannot get to the conference final. So you knew that wasn't going to happen. I'm not saying you take anything away from that, right? You can't. Like, that's in the history books. Nobody does that. Nobody does a 50-point Game 7. And he's had big moments. He's also had the moments where you're looking around and you're like, this is not it. You know what I mean? Like, whether it's the bad shot. Like, here's the one play I will tell you that made me think, because I'm on the plane to Minneapolis. I'm in Minneapolis for game one of the Western Conference Finals tonight. And it was Aaron Nesmith. He gambled on Jason Tatum and left him wide open for a straightaway three. And my first thought was, he ain't making that. You know what I mean? Like, I should not feel that way about a top five, top 10 player. If that's Luka Doncic, I'm saying night-night. If that's Jokic or Ant-Man or any of these other guys, I'm saying you've made a colossal mistake. Because it was Jason Tatum at that point in the game, I was like, he ain't making that. And I'm not saying he's Karl Malone. I'm not saying he's a big game player who can't be trusted. He's a big name player for 46 minutes that can't be trusted in the last two. I'm not saying about him at all. But I am simply saying when he doesn't have it going, it's very hard for him to pull the nose up. He pulled the nose up last night, right? He did pull the nose up late in the game because Jaylen Brown gave him a new lease on life. But if you're asking me why I don't trust him in a clutch situation or in a championship situation, these are the reasons why. Like, if everything has to go perfect for you to redeem yourself, man, that's a tough one for me. And I'm trying to think of the comp of the 2004 Detroit Pistons. That's an interesting one, Tom. And I had a thought and I lost it, but that's an interesting.
Yeah. I feel like that 2004 Pistons team, you know, they were a collective unit in a sense that they were very well coached. They knew their strengths and weaknesses. I feel like I have a lot more confidence. Maybe this is just hindsight 2020. Right, we already know that they won the championship. So we, you know, we're imbuing some sort of like,
yeah, you're starting
IQ
from the end and working your way to the beginning.
Do I feel that confident in this Boston Celtics team that they are going to be the smarter team, the more efficient team, the better execution team down the stretch? I don't. And part of that is Jason Tatum he had 51 points in a game in the postseason last year against Philly to close him out. He also had 14 against the Miami Heat in the game seven to end.
Now he hurt his ankle in that game. He hurt his ankle in the first minute of that game.
Sure. I give you that. But he also had 14 in game three. So, like, there are high moments for Jason Tatum and there are lows. And every time he has a low, you just kind of feel like, man, I wish he was a little bit more consistent. Now, the thing about Jason Tatum is, like you said, if you're going to have a top five score in the league, you got to be a little bit more consistent at just getting to the line and being able to get those points and steadying your offense. It doesn't feel like he has that. But there are highs with Jason Tatum, no doubt. But there are also some lows that make you feel like, man, is a 0-for-6 stretch over a 13-minute span in the fourth quarter and overtime, is that all that surprising? And as you're saying it, when he takes that open three and it's not going in, you don't feel that great. It is those lows with Jason Tatum where you're like, man, I just don't know if he's on that same level as the KDs, the LeBrons, that Jokic, that you just feel like they're going to make the right play and execute down the stretch. And I will also say this, because of those miles on his tires, the gimpy ankle or the foot problems, like those things are going to creep up as we get further into the postseason. It's just a fact of life, is that you are maybe 90% at the start of the postseason. And by the, you listen to KG or anybody, by the end of that, you know, conference finals, you are broken.
Yep.
You are just trying to keep it together for the finals. So, yes, he was hurt in that game 7 last year, but I can't say that he's going to not have those excuses or be able to have that out going forward down the stretch.
It's funny. I will say this because the comparison to the Pistons team, I think, is interesting. It was 2 points that I thought of. One was toward the end of that Pistons run, everything had to go perfect for them. If they were going to get back to the finals when they lost to Miami in 06, they lost to Cleveland when LeBron decided that I'm the best player in the world in 2007. Mm-hmm. And then in 2008, they ran up against a more determined veteran team in the Celtics. And all three of those series were in the conference finals. The mileage began to catch up to those guys where they didn't have that extra gear to get to. And I feel bad for the Celtics in this way, Tom. The Celtics are so good. I don't think they're as good as their record, right? I think, you know, you can look at their record was 66 wins or 64 wins, whatever it was. Like, man, they ain't no 64-win team. That's a really good team. That's a team that could win a championship. But you don't look at them and say, man, this is a absolute juggernaut that's an unstoppable force meeting an unmovable object at the same time. That's not them. But the problem is, Tom, our expectations for them are so high and unfair. If they don't win every game by 20, we're looking at them saying, what's wrong? They don't have the benefit of being able to get a close squeak by you win, a win where they shouldn't have it in the playoffs, and we're dissecting them as if they lost. Like, that's the sort of unfair line that they walk, and I wonder if it's because they've been in the conference finals so many years, and you've had so many iterations, where whether it's been Marcus Smart at point, or Kyrie at point, or Isaiah Thomas at point, or Ime Udoka coaching, or Brad Stevens coaching. Like, you've had all these different iterations. The two constants have been Tatum and Brown, and we expect so much out of them while simultaneously saying, you're not that guy. Like, I feel like we kind of have to pick a side, and we're being slightly unfair.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're not going to face the Nuggets in the finals. So I feel like we're already baking in. They didn't have to face the best team out west, and the Minnesota Timberwolves got the best of the Nuggets. So like, there's already that built in. But you know, the Celtics were 23-7 against the Western Conference in the regular season, which is good, but it's not like 65 win good.
Right. Right.
And I would say, you know, the East was light this year because of a ton of injuries. Giannis, Dame, Joel Embiid, the Knicks, like they overperformed, overachieved in the regular season, but there was not another team in the East that had over 50 wins.
Yep.
So you're looking at I wouldn't say inflated regular season record, but you know, like this is their championship to lose right now. This is their chance. They're up 1-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals. The first two opponents were ravaged by injury. They didn't get tested by the Miami Heat. They didn't get tested by Cleveland. They did get tested in game one after not having basically any crunch time opportunities to really test their mettle. They finally got it in game one, and they look shaky, man. I feel like Indiana Pacers feel good after this one. I know it feels sick, but you like any hangover, man, it's going to feel bad for that morning. And depending how many tequila shots you had the night before, it's going to feel better as the day goes on. And in tomorrow's game, I feel like they got a confidence level that's even higher than they were going into game one.
I will say this as we go to break. And that is why I only sip tequila. I don't shoot tequila anymore because I had a bad night on my 24th birthday. No more. No mas. Let's just say there's a story involved, some lost keys that weren't exactly lost. We'll be back on A Good Word to talk with Tom Haberstroh about the playoff games lost due to injury and how the final four guys finally healthy. Welcome back to The Good Word here with Tom Haberstroh. We just got finished having a great conversation that you guys will never hear, that will never see the light of day. But pretty much, drinking vodka is for losers, Charles Barkley. It's totally for losers. Or college students, right? that what you say? Vodkas for college students?
Yeah, sure. It's a grandpa's, grandma's. That's fine.
It's a cheap it's a cheap drink. I'm gonna get Chuck to step his game up. But you have an article coming out today, Tom, about playoff games lost due to injury for players and how it's up 22%, and basically how the last four teams remaining are the healthiest teams in the league, and that is not a coincidence.
Yeah, man. Like, we watched that Indiana Pacers New York Knicks series, right? And it was tough to watch the Knicks go through that. It was, you know, the feeling I got was the Black Knight from Monty Python, where he's just getting his arms cut off, and he's like, "It's just a flesh wound." That's how it was like watching the New York Knicks with, you know, you got Josh Hart with the thing on his abdominals. Then Jalen Brunson, he's out with a foot injury. No, wait, he broke his hand. And it's just like one thing after another. And I started looking at the data to see if injuries were up. And indeed, we are now after Tuesday night's game one with Kristaps Porzingis out and with Benedict Mathurin when he's out. That has now pushed the playoff total of player games lost due to injury or illness to 200. 200 times have we had a player who's been out due to injury, and that is eclipsing last year's total in the entire postseason. So to put it in perspective, last year for the four rounds of the playoffs, there were 199 player games lost due to injury, and we've already hit 200, which is about 2.9 per team per game, guys who are out.
Right.
And that is, Vinny, one of the highest rates we've seen, if not the highest, in a non-COVID year. So 2020, COVID year, not just about injuries, but also, you know, the COVID regulations and protocols. This is trending to be the most injury-riddled postseason of the last decade plus. And even going back, I don't have the data in front of me, but this didn't happen. Like, whoever was the favorite going into the postseason usually won the title, or at least it was very predictive. Like, who is the juggernaut? They're probably going to make it to the finals.
Right.
In the last 6 years, Vinny, we've had a new champion, and we're going to have a new champion this year. And a lot of it, people are saying it's because of financial tax penalties and the CBA clamping down on second apron. I'm saying, look at the injuries. Like, so many injuries are happening every year in the postseason, whether it's the 2021 Brooklyn Nets, when they had Kyrie and James Harden get hurt. They were the favorites going into the postseason. Last year, the Milwaukee Bucks were the favorite going into the postseason. They get they lose in the first round because Giannis is hurt.
Yeah.
So many of the playoffs, so much of the playoffs now, I feel like, are dictated not by who's better, but who's healthier. And to an extent, that's always been the case, but more so in the last, you know, five, six years.
I feel like that's, like you said, I feel like that's always been a major subplot of the postseason, is who's healthier, who's playing, who's as close to 100% as possible. Now it's a matter of who's actually on the floor compared to who's not on the floor, like that sort of thing. I totally get that. And I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to ask you, because you said this year there's more games missed, and it seems like we're at a later starting point of the conference finals or somewhere close to it. Do you think the in-season tournament, this is just me spitballing here, I'm curious.
Do you
think the in-season tournament and maybe the emphasis on those games has an effect later on that you're sort of paying the bill on?
100%. I talked to a couple GMs and coaches over the course of the season, and I pointed to the fact that in early season, in-season tournament time, November, December, the star participation, like the LeBrons, the KDs, the Stephs of the world, they were playing every – Kawhi Leonard, Zion Williamson, these guys were playing every game, Paul George. But then that bill was being paid – right after the All-Star break, you saw guys go down. Boom, boom. Joel Embiid, Giannis, Zion in the play-in tournament. And yes, Adam Silver mentioned it in the press conference at the Board of Governors, I think it was, where he's like, star participation was up 15% this year. We're feeling very good about it. The player participation policy and the 65-game rule was a success. It's working. And I was like, hold up. The whole idea of load management or managing minutes during the regular season is to make sure Joel Embiid and Giannis and Zion are ready for the postseason. and Kawhi got hurt, Giannis got hurt, Zion got hurt, and you're looking at a postseason where, yeah, we got four teams, Boston, Indiana, Minnesota, and the Dallas Mavericks, who have earned their spots.
Right.
But let's not ignore the fact that a lot of these teams are dealing with so many injuries, and the Celtics weren't tested in the first round, and the Indiana Pacers, they benefit. I don't want to take anything away from the Pacers. They've earned their spot, but we have to also be fair and point out that their road consisted of no Giannis at all, two games without Dame, and then a New York Knicks team that had no Julius Randle, no Bojan, no Jalen Brunson for the end of that game seven. And I just feel like the injury variable is larger than we've had in quite some time. This is the era of, you know what? The best ability is availability, and that means more in the postseason than it has in a long, long time.
You know, it's funny. It's something that came up for me just as we were thinking, as we were talking about the Knicks. If you had, remember the game of Operation? Like, Tom, you're probably older than me. So you remember the game of Operation? Buzz, like you'd grab the you never played
Operation.
I'm just
trying to figure out what was the tip that I'm older than you. What was the tell? Was it that I'm bald as hell? I'm a bowling ball over here.
No, honestly, you know what it is? It's because I felt like I've seen you on TV for so long. I feel like when I started on the beat, like
nice recovery.
you were somewhere around like near TV. Like I don't even actually know your age, and you could. I'll put it like this. Does your number start with a 3 or a 4?
It's a 3. I went to college with Chris Paul at Wake. I was a class of 08 at Wake. He was 07. Yeah.
Oh, I might be older than you. Black just might not be cracking
that just
over
happened?
Here.
That just happened? Okay. All right. So I was born in 86. So whatever that puts you at.
Yeah, I'm older. I'm older than you.
That face tells me you were not born after 86.
I was not. I was not born after 86. I was not born after 86 at all. I'm older than you. That's what I'll say.
Why don't you tell me what order of operation was then?
Okay. Well, operation.
The operation game where you kind of pull.
You're trying to pull the bone out of certain spots, out of a body, and you have this little almost like not like a fork, but like tweezers almost. And if you hit like something before, it's almost like you're performing surgery or something. You're trying to get a bone out. And if you get it without touching the body part, then you're fine. But if you touch the body part, it goes like that sort of thing. That was the game of operation. I feel like Tom Thibodeau, if you put a body chart up, right? Every body part he probably will have claimed at some point during his career. Not just this year, where you've got like 7 or 8 dudes. One dude with a hand, one dude with a foot, one dude with a shoulder, one dude with an abdominal. You can literally do, like Tom Thibodeau has probably claimed the body parts of every body part there is in the anatomy because he drives hard. And That's Derrick Rose's knees, right? He took Derrick Rose's knees away from him. Julius Randle's shoulder, Jalen Brunson's hand. I'm being sarcastic
his
here.
Foot more, yeah.
I'm being slightly sarcastic,
too, yeah.
Just for the effect of fun. But to move forward, Tom, here's the question I have for you. Does this change the way that you think teams look to build contending rosters? Because before it used to be, you get older players or veteran players because they know the rigors of playoff basketball. They play smart, all this other stuff. Young teams are stupid. But younger teams are generally healthier and they stay upright. And if you're going to have a new champion every year, would you not take your chances with younger players in younger teams compared to older teams that are more likely to break down health-wise?
Yo, you said it, man. Like, I think the future, the next phase is going to be teams that are built like the Pacers and the Celtics. Like, look at the Pacers right now. They had the highest points per game from their bench in the regular season. They're built to outrun you, outwork you, and hit shots. Man, they were nails up until the last lemon booty couple minutes of that game. They were unbelievably high execution in that game. And they were doing that against the Knicks too, where they're hitting shots. They're running up and down the gym. And like Rick Carlisle, that was part of the program, was like, yo, we're going to go 10 deep with our bench.
Mm-hmm.
And our top guys aren't going to play 48 minutes a game. We're going to be able to lean on our bench, our youth, and just execute at a high level. Like, the ability to coach this Indiana Pacers team to the level that he is kind of crazy when you think about how young they are and how they're using Obi Toppin as like a key member of this team. Yeah. Where like he couldn't get off the bench for Tom Thibodeau, right? Tom Thibodeau's like, I got my six guys and I'm going down with the ship, right? He is playing the violin on the Titanic and being like, I'm going down with the ship. The problem with that thinking is, what is the cost to next year? Jalen Brunson is now going to have surgery on his hand, probably some rehab on his foot, whatever was going on with his foot. And he's going to lose a couple months this summer rehabbing when he could be fresher, I would argue, if he wasn't, you know, dealing with these bumps and bruises and 48-minute games. Same with Josh Hart. Is like, I feel like Tom Thibodeau has a very high floor as a coach, but also a very low ceiling as a coach. He has been in the postseason 9 times. He has not made it to the finals at any of those 9 times. And there are great head coaches who have the same similar postseason fate. Mike D'Antoni comes to mind. But Mike D'Antoni faces the same sort of he can't build a winner, the same sort of like, I don't know, a doubt as his abilities to coach at the highest levels of the game. And I feel like Tom Thibodeau, he's not going to change, man. And judging by his post-game press conference, he ain't going to change at all. Those Tigers are not changing their stripes. And I feel like this might be the best. This might be the best it ever gets for the New York Knicks, because I think those injuries, it's not just in a vacuum. Those things add up. And as we saw with Isaiah Thomas, man, you push those bodies to the brink. And at some point, like, right, you might not ever be the same. And not to say that Jalen Brunson is the next Isaiah Thomas, but it's not
you're
like
talking about
these
Isaiah
Bills
Boston
are
Celtics, Isaiah Thomas.
Correct. Correct. And by the way, Isaiah Thomas, his career was shortened, not just because of the high minutes, but just like, talk about a man, if we could see that guy from 35, 36, 37, we never got to see that because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
But I will just say, this injury thing next year, I feel like a lot of teams are going to build their teams like the Celtics, where instead of going out and trying to get a Kevin Durant finals MVP, a guy who's in his, you know, late 30s, going to try to go get LeBron, going to try to go get whomever it might be. Steph Curry is great, but they didn't make the playoffs, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. I feel like the next phase is going to be strength in numbers. And this, it's weird to say that about the Warriors because that was their mantra. But more A-, B-plus players, because the injuries are going to take a toll in the postseason. But you know what? Kristaps Porzingis is down, and the Celtics are 7 wins away from winning a title. And they look like they're in the driver's seat because they have so many good players.
The problem is nobody actually believes that the Celtics are going to win a title. We just say that they should. And the point is of Isaiah, you're right. Isaiah Thomas the Greater, is he had the Achilles injury that was the thing that ended, but he had broke his hands, you know, a few times. Once punching Bill Cartwright, another time punching Bill Laimbeer, and yes, Bill Laimbeer was on his team. You know what I mean? Like, and then he had wrist surgery in '91, which basically ended that season. And it was all the nicks and bruises of being a 6'1" guy playing in a compressed era. By compressed, I mean, Tom, the floor wasn't spread. You're getting hit all the time. Like, it's not like a wind-up, you know, wind-up and hit, because there's just not enough space. Everybody's operating in the same real estate. And you're just going to get whacked. And that does damage to your knees and your shoulders. And, you know, especially if you're a little guy. Now I think the injury risk is because of so much back and forth, because of so much of the pace of today's game, and you have to cover so much ground in the half court.
Geometry, man, you said it. The geometry of the game, where you're having to run around and defend 40 feet in.
Mm-hmm.
The screens that are being set now are near half court every damn time down the floor. So like the bigs and the smalls, they're just the sheer geometry of the game is so much more demanding on your tendons, your knees, your ligaments than ever before.
Yeah, and here's the weird thing. A, I think, you know, the whole super team thing, if you're still trying to find yourself a third superstar, you're probably doing it wrong, Los Angeles Lakers. That's probably not the way to build your team and to think that you're going to find a champion somewhere within that. But go ahead. It just makes for more, you know, ESPN, Yahoo Sports, you know, podcast and written word fodder, because the expectations will rise and that's not the game that's being played anymore. But Tom, if injuries are our guide, if the healthiest team wins, what team will win the NBA title out of the Final Four?
To me, I think the injury question is more solved by the Boston Celtics than anybody else. You look at Luka and his knee. You look at Karl Anthony Towns and his knee. I mean, the meniscus tear at the end of the season, it doesn't feel like it's all good right now. Like, he's been limping around in that in the postseason. Mike Conley's questionable. Mike Conley's questionable with Achilles. With the calf strain, and he missed a game already. The Minnesota Timberwolves have had one player game loss due to injury this entire postseason run, and it was Mike Conley, and it's still not right. Like, being listed as questionable, and he's probably going to play. He might play in game one. But the fact that they're listing him is evidence that, like, he's not right.
Right.
Then you got like the fact that the Pacers, I feel like, yes, they're healthy. And Mathurin's the only guy that they've had out this entire postseason, which is really impressive. But to me, I think their ceiling isn't winning the championship in the same way that the Boston Celtics are. They just got so much talent. Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. They've just got so many weapons that even if Kristaps Porzingis needs to wait a series and come back in the finals, I think they can get there. So I feel like the Boston Celtics, they've been pretty healthy on average. They've had a healthier postseason than average this year. But still, there's questions there. And let's just hope that we get a completely injury-free conference finals and finals so that we don't have to talk about, man, if this team was healthy. It's so annoying to have to do that at the end of the year. Like, the conversations that you have, the content that we produce about, like, yeah, but if the Knicks were healthy, yeah, if the Minnesota Timberwolves were healthy, the Milwaukee Bucks were healthy, what about if Philly,
right,
if Embiid's healthy? Those what if they were healthy things are not good for the game, and I just hope we don't have to have those conversations when it's all said and done.
Well, I think, honestly, it's just a part of the game. I legit think it is a part of the discussion, and you have to bake it in. Like, we bake it in with football all the time, and injuries play a huge part in that game, and maybe it's more acceptable because of the physicality of it. And we think of basketball as being a non-contact sport. Maybe we should think of it as being a contact sport. It's just part of it. Like, you can go up and down the list. And I said a little bit earlier, you can go up and down the list. You can define a champion from maybe the only year that you probably couldn't say it is 2001 with the Lakers, right? Even the 17 Golden State Warriors had to deal with a Kawhi Leonard who was tearing them down bit by bit in game one of that Western Conference final series. And then Zaza Pachulia decided, hey, y'all, this is a little too close for comfort. Let me just stick my foot underneath his leg. Like, up until then.
That,
right?
That shoe should be in the Hall of Fame, the Naismith Hall of Fame.
And that might have been
Zaza's shoe.
And that Golden State team might be the single best team I've ever seen in my life. That could be better than the 96 Bulls, better than the 2001 Lakers. But the 2001 Lakers, the only thing that stopped them in one game was Allen Iverson going for 48 in overtime, and the Lakers had like 8 days off. But other than that, I think you can look to every NBA champion. I mean, even the six-time champion Bulls, all the LeBron James championships, the Bad Boys, the Showtime Lakers, everybody that you can think of, and you can say, man, an injury here or there could change the fortune. So I think injury plays a part in the story of it, and I just think we have to just become more accepting of it. I just don't know if I can fix my mouth to say that these Boston Celtics are going to win an NBA championship. Because especially after seeing last night, I don't know if I see a champion. I just see a team that won a game. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is Tom Haberstroh. Thanks to Tom for giving us some of his time today. Producer Colin, in place of producer John, and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes on this show. Tomorrow, Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room on the Ball Don't Lie feed. I'll be back on Tuesday because I'm taking Memorial Day off. Until then, everybody be safe.